This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Now, I can get on the wagon of I don't think she intentionally killed him. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's truly enough evidence to show that she did hit him. There probably is, but I don't know. I think you could argue it both ways. I think, you know, you can believe that she's guilty or you can believe that she's innocent, and you don't have to believe the insane story over here of everybody beating him up in this house party. They don't have to coexist. But I feel like so many people are on this bandwagon of the two have to coincide. They don't. You can away from that because that doesn't make any sense. The other part makes a lot more sense of either she hit him or she didn't. But he died getting out of that vehicle. Either he slipped, fell, what the hell ever. Something happened. But to incorporate all that as a fact, just, I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, is that, what is that? Where people who have nothing to do with this case get so entwined in this with utter nonsense that I just don't, that I don't understand.
Yeah, because as with most things, the truth often ends up when you have these binary opposites, right? Truth often ends up being a blend of both things or somewhere in the middle. And as you say, there are all kinds of possible things that could have resulted in his death. And we, you know, can never be completely sure about this case. I don't know that we're ever going to have the total answer that we can all get on the same page and go, aha, here's the truth. You know, I don't think we're going to know. But people do seem to be in this, you know, the echo chambers on social media where they're amplifying a certain narrative over and over. And then it becomes like a team sport where people are in one group or the other, and then they're all fighting. And, you know, we don't ever get to the truth that way.
That's weird. And that's what it feels like a little bit on X or Twitter right now. There's just a gazillion fake accounts that are just insinuating the madness and just saying really extreme things out there. And it seems to get a lot of people upset, and it's all coming from the Karen Reed camp for the most part, people that are actually using their names out there like me and several others. You're not seeing that. You're seeing like these weird accounts with weird names that are all about the case itself. And it's just, it's like, I don't know. It's inserting chaos into something where there already is plenty of chaos. Why are we doing this? If we really truly want to figure out what exactly happened. There's also this moment of testimony. This is from Carrie Roberts, and this is backing up to the very beginning, where she talks about that phone call that she got from Karen Reed and how that went down.
When she first called, she said, "John's dead, Carrie, and hung up.
And she called you back?
She called back.
When she called back, was there any other party on the line other than you and her?
No.
What do you remember the second time that she called you?
Yes. She said, "John, I think he got hit by a plow. He did not come home last night. He would never not have come home. I wasn't supposed to stay in Canton, and Kaylee was here. He would never leave Kaylee by herself."
Did anybody ever ask you to lie?
No.
Or exaggerate?
No.
Would you?
Say that?
Would you?
No. Sustained.
You were asked whether or not you told people on January 29th about the missing pieces to the defendant's taillight. And you began to say you didn't tell anybody that morning.
I didn't think it had anything to do with John. I didn't want to point fingers at anybody.
Why not?
Because I had no idea what had happened to him. I wasn't going to point fingers at his girlfriend.
Was it in fact broken with missing pieces that morning?
Yes.
It's interesting. She's so hesitant to try and not point fingers at Karen. Yet who's pointing the biggest finger at Karen? Karen. I mean, what does that say about all this? Nobody is blaming her. It's not, there's nobody that's going, "You must have hit him because you had a broken taillight."
Exactly.
It's only Karen pointing the finger at herself.
Yeah. Yeah, you were getting unfiltered Karen at that point, mm-hmm. and her worst fear. And you can see her trying to come up with different scenarios. Was he hit by a snowplow?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think whenever somebody gets a phone call in the middle of the night, or in this case, she didn't get a return to any of her phone calls in the middle of the night, it's easy to go to the worst case scenario that somebody is dead.
It's interesting where she talks about where Karen is asking, maybe he got hit by a snowplow. Mm-hmm. That's adding a little more conjecture to this. It's not just, mm-hmm. you know, I looked back and I didn't see him, because she never mm-hmm. said that. That's just my own conjecture going, you know, that maybe that's why she didn't know what happened, because she looked back mm-hmm. and didn't see him, because the way he was positioned, it's kind of in a blind spot. You might not actually have seen him. Mm-hmm. But then she goes to snowplow. Mm-hmm. Why would he be hit by a snowplow unless mm-hmm. you have some idea that he's stumbling around the street or near the street, mm-hmm. which is where mm-hmm. he was. Mm-hmm. So then that is where you get over to consciousness of guilt. And that's where I think, I mean, it's still a very gray area on that, because if she did see he was down, or was concerned about that, but was so angry, it was like, screw him, I'm leaving. Then you're leaving the scene of an accident. You're leaving the scene of someone that is injured. But I guess when you have to go back, did she know he was injured? Even if she saw him, he could be out there. She could have thought he slipped and he's stumbling around and he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's going to go to the yard. She could be thinking, oh, he's screwing with me or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a thousand mm-hmm. things that you yep. could think. I mean, unless he's just like flat down in the yard, not moving, which mm-hmm. clearly he wasn't initially. He was, I mean, unless he got propelled by the vehicle, which is a possibility as well. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're going to be able to prove that this is consciousness of guilt? Because if there is, and there does seem to be a lot about it, but you got alcohol in play here.
Right.
That is second degree murder at that mm-hmm. point, because everyone's, how do you get there? That's how you get there. And mm-hmm. and the guilt, the timeline of all this really seems to point at Karen having some sort of knowledge here. Is that going to, do you think the jury's going to take it that way?
You could make a case that way. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, depending on all the other evidence that, you know, we haven't heard the defense's side yet, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it goes either direction. Mm-hmm. I could certainly see a hung jury.
Yeah. Yeah, I could too. For good measure, while she was screaming, you know, could I have hit him? Did I hit him? You know, all that, not thinking, is he on someone's couch? Mm-hmm. She did interject a little bit more of her otherwise seemingly primal concern about everything with John O'Keefe, despite any evidence that he was ever cheating on her, is, was he cheating on me? And this is what she said.
You're in the car with Miss Roberts and the defendant?
Yes.
What's happening in the car?
Karen is screaming, and at that point she had asked if John could be cheating on her and if John could be with Bella's mom.
And then what happens?
I just didn't know what the hell she was talking about. I was like, what are you talking about? Why would he be with Bella's mom? And then Carrie said, well, do you think he could have walked to, there was another woman years before that John had dated who lived on the next street over, to her house.
And as you approach that area before you get to the flagpole, does anything remarkable happen?
No.
Okay. What happens next?
As we're driving down the street, I just say to Carrie, because she doesn't know where my sister lives, oh, her house is just at the bottom of the street.
Visibility still difficult?
Yes, awful.
What happens next?
We continue, you know, driving, and we're driving slowly past, you know, the line of, I guess, bushes and the flagpole area. And all of a sudden, Karen's screaming from the back, there he is, or something to the effect of, there he is, let me out.
Did you know what she was talking about?
I had no idea.
When she was yelling that, did you look out the window?
Yeah, we had our eyes peeled out the window.
Did you see anything?
Nothing but snow.
How long was she yelling about whatever it is she was saying?
She screamed, stop. So Carrie stopped pretty quickly. There he is. She could have kicked the door, like, let me out of here.
It's like playing Where's Waldo blindfolded in a snowstorm while drunk. It's, again, that's another piece that I think points to some consciousness of guilt. Knowing where he is, you can't see him. He is covered in a snowdrift.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the very strange aspects of this is, you know, did she, again, have a piece of memory? Was it unconscious or was it consciousness of guilt that she knew that that's where he fell? Yeah.
Was she playing Sherlock? You know, was she going, you know, this is the last place I saw him.
Right.
I didn't see him go in the house, even though she says she did later. But in reality, I don't believe she saw him go in the house because he didn't go in the house.
Yeah.
And it was that just all of those pieces coming together going, I got to look in that area. And and I'm hoping he's there. But I'm going to say, there he is, there he is, even though you can't see him at that moment in time. They literally had to dig him out of the snow. And, you know, in a body object that size, and you got a lot of snow drifting, you're not going to see anything. It's like I've said it before. It's like you got lawn tools out in your yard, and then the first snow comes in. It's like, oh, there's my shovel, you discover next spring or whatever. It's that's how that works. So the fact that she knew to make a beeline to him right at that moment, that's a hard one.
A hard one. Yeah, it's another bizarre aspect to this that, it, as you say, it doesn't bode well for her. It, you know, when you add it all up, did I hit him? Did I hit him? I think I hit him. Could I have?
Could he be cheating on me? Which seemed to be an overwhelming theme with her in the relationship. Always paranoid, very afraid that John's going to leave her or whatever. Those sort of elements to it. And when we know more about Karen, when we see the way she's acted in the documentary, I mean, one could say there's a lot of narcissistic traits going on here. To me, it follows a bit of a pattern of, okay, they're going to act this way. They're probably going to act that way too. And then her lack of taking any sort of responsibility here and just blaming it on the very people who were actually trying to help her find him that morning. What does that speak of the greater picture here of Karen Reed? I know we can't diagnose her, but you know, if we're just looking at traits, what does it say?
Well, when I heard the content of those angry phone calls to him, the accusatory raging phone calls when he was dead in the yard, it made me think of...
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. She was the perfect wife, always smiling, always supportive. A pillar of the community, beloved by friends, adored by family, and secretly researching undetectable poisons in her spare time. Maybe it was the way he chewed. Maybe she just got bored. Or maybe, just maybe, she had been planning this since the honeymoon. But if he had just paid attention, if he had just known what to look for, if he had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and learned the red flags, he could have heard every episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Ad-free, and before everyone else, he could have seen it coming. Instead, he's 6 feet under, and she's shopping for husband number two. Don't be like him. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.